For the first time since opening night, the T-Pose is back. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. It's actually kind of weird that George Russell hasn't won a race since opening day. It doesn't feel like it. It's weird.
Yeah, Sasha had talked about that when we were watching that together on Sunday.
Indeed. Welcome to episode 668 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. Glad you could join us. Quite a weekend of news in the world of motorsport. We had Formula One in Austria. We had MotoGP's legendary Assen TT, the Dutch Grand Prix, as they technically want to call it now. It's the Assen TT to me, damn it. And that's the name I want to call it.
It is the Assen TT. It will always be the Assen TT.
Fuck
long after we are in the dirt.
Fuck Dorna calling it the Dutch Grand Prix now. No, call it its proper name, damn it. It's the Assen TT. Anyway, we'll talk about that more in our next episode. We even had bowling at the Glen in huge capacity. Isn't that right, Mr. Cameron Buckley?
Still don't know how the 31 didn't get a penalty. I've accidentally shot him in the face with a shotgun. Oh, bother.
Sorry.
We did have that. I remain 40 kilograms nerfed, but Lauren Heinrich remains absolutely beastly. He passed the BMW around the outside of the bus stop at Watkins Glen. Ooh, and filthy. I've never made more money in my life.
Investing in Lauren Heinrich early has made Cameron Buckley a billionaire.
Yes, if only inflation wasn't so bad these days. I now will not be able to buy a cheap copy of Gran Turismo 9 for my PlayStation 7 a few years from now.
Yeah, it's because it's all going to be digital. It's going to be delisted by then. You know how licenses are nowadays, you know? Because apparently we don't do discs anymore.
We don't do discs anymore. I for one am overjoyed with the inshittification of everything. You know what wasn't inshittified? The line speed Porsche going from pit lane to the win in the Spa 24 hours. Thomas Prining early investment has made me money too. That boy nice. Boost is nice. Heinrich was actually supposed to be in that car. But because he's in the fight for the IMSA title by accident,
yeah,
he kept him over in Watkins Glen. Really fun to watch. Also really silly to watch the way the cars were balanced out there, where the 51 Ferrari, stop me if you've heard this one before on this show, just had infinite straight line speed. It was like half a second clear of the field every time through the first sector at Spa, and then it was kind of a boat, which has made it really silly to watch.
That does sound like quite a strange race car to drive and watch, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, that does sound wacky.
It's buying a stock car in GT3 and slamming a Stage 4 turbo on the bitch.
I've been there many a time when I was a child. Get the Dodge Viper, put a Stage 4 turbo on it, and have it like have 1,000 horsepower, and then you just can't control it anywhere. It's great.
Yeah, all that is a Forza Edition Miata.
Yeah, pretty much. Now that you mention it, yeah, that works. The whole... We got a fun couple of episodes lined up this week. Sadly, no RJ. Before we give him a little breather after, because he was actually at Watkins Glen covering that for DSC. So we decided to let him have a little break.
Much earned R&R for the man.
Indeed. So just me and Cam for the next two episodes. Hopefully we'll have RJ back next week. Just a small matter of the Formula One British Grand Prix to get through, you know, the big one for F1 at this point. So we'll talk about that next week, of course.
I mean, all we can really hope for is that we never get a repeat of Bike Live's greatest episode. Hashtag cancelled.
Hopefully the resurfacing has gone better than the last one, indeed. But in this episode in particular, we'll be talking about Formula One's Austrian Grand Prix. One of my favorite tracks on the calendar. I do love the Red Bull Ring. It's a Red Bull Ring race is never dull. It always has something. It is one of those sorts of funky races where... In the race itself might even be a bit boring, but you're bound to get a flashpoint in there somewhere from team orders, drama, teammates hitting each other, controversial decisions, you name it, it's there. And this one was at least mildly intriguing from a tactical standpoint, at least. Hey, you can't complain too much when you've got 2 seconds covering the entire Grand Prix podium nowadays.
I actually thought From a tactical level, this is probably my favorite race of the year. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a fascinating tactical race. We'll break it down over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. We'll talk about what's in a yellow flag. Is George Russell back? Is Max Verstappen back in capital letters? Because, my God, he had a great race. Ferrari, not so much.
They were back to what we expect.
And Bernie was back because, for fuck's sake, Formula One can't help itself. Right, all of that in the next 40 minutes or so. But first, just get the general housekeeping out of the way as to places where you can find us. Before I do that, I didn't even really want to mention this, but I know a lot of people have wanted me to. Sadly, yes, you've probably seen the news on my social media already. Sadly, I've been let go from Crash that happened on Monday morning. I just want to take a quick moment out to say thank you for all the kind words and messages and support. I do really, really... It really does mean a lot. I can't believe I'm saying this for the third time in 3 years. Like, I've been doing this show for nearly 11 now, and it's the third time in 3 years I've had to say, though, a motorsport company has let me go. Let's just say, small group, not a lot of revenue coming in. These things happen when you're on a full-time salary and there's a money amount over your head. We all know staff's the first to go. That's just how these things go. Unfortunately, the industry is changing, and I think a lot of people are learning the hard way that the bag of Formula One growth is not as full as people were hoping it was going to be 5 years on from the initial boon. So we'll have to see what happens. People have asked, what's the best way you can support me? Look, I'm going to be okay. That's the most important thing. M101 is not going to change. I will find a way to keep this going no matter what, okay? So do not fret for this show. This will always be around. The Patreon, thankfully, pays for itself in that regard. So please don't feel like you have to donate, is what I would say. Like, if you really, really want to support me and support us on the show financially, you can at patreon.com/motorsport101, but please don't feel like you have to do it because I'm out of work. I'm very lucky. I've got a very supporting family. I've got a roof over my head. That is far more important than whether or not I work in motorsport or not. Perspective on all of that. The best thing you can do to support me is talk about the show. Spread the good word. Tell your friends. Tell your family, tell people that you think we might be cool for you. That's the best way you can possibly support us. I said it on Instagram earlier today, and I'll say it again here. I got into the industry professionally because you don't know who's watching you. And one of those people was Andrew Vandenberg, who used to be CEO of the race. That's how I got the gig at WTF1. It was through your word of mouth and you telling people that this was a show worth watching. So all I can ask is, if you see a show, retweet it. If you read a written article and you like it, retweet and share it. Tell your friends, tell your people that we're worth reading, we're worth watching, we're worth listening to. That is worth its weight in gold. I cannot tell you how invaluable that is. So please, 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 if you really feel like that's, if you really want to support me, that's the best way you can do it. I will never sit here and tell people that you have to go back as financially, otherwise the show will end. That's not what I'm about. That's not what we're about, quite frankly. So thank you again for all the support. It really does mean a lot. If anything comes up, of course, you guys will be the first to know on this show. But a thank you as well to Ian, to both Lewis's, Duncan and Larkham, Sam, to all the team at Crash who gave me the opportunity. I'm very grateful for it. I don't take this for granted. I'm very blessed to be able to work in an industry I genuinely love, for all its warts and all. So we don't burn bridges here. I'm not Maverick Vinales. although, to be fair, if I get one more motorsport redundancy, I think Nando's owes me a free half chicken. So I guess there's some perks out there anyway. Places you can find us real quick. If you really want to support us, there's the places you can find us. So please listen up. YouTube.com facebook.com, Motorsport101 on there. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_1. If you want to follow me personally, you can at DreHarrison101. Cam's at CBuckley917. RJ O'Connell is his name, RJ O'Connell. We're also on Blue Sky. I think pretty much the exact same dots to bsky.social on the end. That's, I think, just take out the 101 for me. I think Cam and RJ's is exactly the same as otherwise. Instagram, yep. Motorsport101pod, for highlights of the show and other bits and pieces over there as well. We're on TikTok as well, M101_podcast. There'll be a lot more of these coming out now because I've actually got a bit more free time on my hands, hopefully, to actually produce them. And if you really want to support us, the best way you can is on our website, motorsport101.com. There's also full written reviews on there of both this race and MotoGP's Assen TT, another loaded edition over there as well, because there was a lot to talk about in regards to Assen, the championship, the main flashpoint of Marco Bezzecchi not finishing, all of that good stuff is in there. And of course, one more time, patreon.com/motorsport101. If you want to really help us and back us financially, you can. Again, please do not feel like you have to do this, but if you want to listen to these shows 24 hours early and listen to them live, you can do so over there at certain levels. Jason's doing so in our chat right now. Many thanks to him as ever. Right. Well, now we've got that slightly emotional general housekeeping out of the way. Let's get on with it. Let's do what we do best. Let's review some motorsport. Let's talk about the 2026 Austrian Grand Prix.
Austria's Grand Prix weekend had early controversy on Saturday after George Russell took pole position despite single, then double, then single again, yellow flag zones during his lap. After Max Verstappen crashed at turn 9 on his hot lap due to a not quite closed all the way rear wing on his Red Bull. Russell was cleared of wrongdoing because he did lift going into the single yellow and lost a sufficient amount of time to not lose the lap. You are allowed to do so. Remember that. It becomes important in a minute. During the race itself, Russell kept that early lead and cleared Lewis Hamilton by enough to cancel out any undercut attempt. Both Ferraris had to go 3 stopping due to severe tire wear. Mm-hmm. And after Max Verstappen got past Hamilton, it turns out that Verstappen had real pace in the revised Red Bull and was ripping time out of George Russell in his first and second stints. In Max's second stint, he actually got within about a second of Russell, but Mercedes struck first by boxing first. It left Verstappen in a tricky predicament, having to stop early due to tire wear by extending his hard stint and not being able to extend all the way to switch to mediums with the rising threat of Kimi Antonelli. Hey, remember that guy? It's like still leading the championship and shit.
Yeah.
Eating into his lead. The 3 closed up at the end on their staggered tire strategies, but Russell held on by 1.6 seconds to take his second win of the season ahead of Verstappen, and Antonelli just 0.3 behind Verstappen. And with it, Russell gets back into second in the standings and cuts Antonelli's advantage in the points to just 40. Well, single yellow, double yellow. What is it in a yellow, Dre?
Yes. If nothing else, what have we always said about George Russell over the years? He's a nerd. He's the Randall Weems of Formula One. He's a nerd. And most importantly, in this instance, he knows the rule book. And this was critically important when it came to his lap. This was, you could see on the replays, a lot of places like Sky broke this down when it actually happened. Max has this huge wreck. I was mentioning his rear wing didn't close all the way when he went into turn 9, lost all the rear downforce of his car, and just lost the rear and spun all the way to the outside fence between turns 9 and 10. It was a big old accident.
Very importantly, because there was a bunch of commentary about this from people who don't know how aerodynamics work, because it's better to be loudly wrong than quietly right. When the rear wing closes on one of these cars, it has to be closed all the way, and it has to be closed for a certain amount of time for that downforce to actually reconnect with, and that airflow to reconnect on the wing.
Yeah.
Due to a fault on the rear wing, the airflow didn't reattach. So he just sailed it off into that turn. He had no rear grip.
Yeah.
He had all the front wing and none of the rear wing.
just turns, the whole thing spins out. He's being yanked out and he's going all the way to the outside wall between turns 9 and 10. This is where it gets interesting, because the reports, at least from what I've read, is that Race Control was genuinely considering whether they go single yellow or double yellow. And the reason why that was is because Verstappen's all the way in the wall. Like, and that is, it's quite a deep gravel track on the outside of Austria between turns 9 and 10. I would say Max was a good 30, 40 meters off the racing line. So apparently Race Control was considering whether they wanted to go single or double yellow. And again, the main reason why they were considering that approach was because if the car's far enough off the road, they could potentially go single yellow and keep everybody's lap times going, basically, so no one loses a lap. Because for those who don't know the quirk in the rule, if there is a marshal zone that is double yellow, your lap time is automatically deleted. You're not allowed to keep any lap time that's under a double waved yellow. So they were hovering between single and double yellows in this situation. It turns out by the time that Russell had lifted, because the replay shows he did genuinely lift. He lifted 100 meters earlier than he normally did going into turn 9. By the time he gets to turn 10, the track's green. There's a green zone, he can go at full racing speed, no problem. The double wave, the yellow, comes out after Russell's already crossed the line. So he's already past that marshal zone. Russell does nothing wrong. It's in, everything he did was within the rule book. He's allowed to keep his pole.
Exactly right. And, I mean, in a scenario... It is. He played it exactly right. And he's the one who read the rule book, and he was in a position to exploit it. He was in the right part of the track. Sometimes, as Valentino Rossi would say, this is the races.
Yeah, sometimes it breaks that way for you. And and Russell took full advantage of that. He knows the book. He slowed down enough to meet the criteria of the yellow flag zone. He did genuinely lose time. He said after the fact that his delta had him half a second up going through turn 9.
Yeah, the lap was... Look, Mercedes are well and truly back on form here. They destroyed everybody in qualifying on their final runs, but just that we didn't get to see Kimi actually finish his.
Yeah, because Kimi saw the yellows and aborted, which he openly would later, it was a mistake, because there was a possibility they could have been cleared or only single yellows, which again, given parameters, you could potentially still set a legal lap time. It is the potentially in that you don't know what's going to happen at the time, but Antonelli backed off early, essentially. But I actually saw the E-Lister video on YouTube comparing Russell and Charles Leclerc, who originally was on pole, had to end up second in qualifying. Mercedes were half a second faster in a straight line over the course of the lap. The Ferrari was genuinely quicker in, like, in those low and medium speed traction zones, but Mercedes, their top speed and their deployment is just so much better than Ferrari's right now. They were half a second up on the straights. It's crazy how much time they're making in a straight line compared to everybody else right now. It's insane.
Well, and specifically against Ferrari, because actually Red Bull were pretty much like just behind them overall in a straight line. The biggest thing is, relative to Ferrari, to kind of go into the race and what it looked like, Ferrari just destroyed their tires. I mean, Lewis's tires were burning off the rims in half a stint.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that a little bit more in a minute, but going back to the single qualifying situation for just a minute here. Again, the fingers need to be pointed at Race Control for this one, because by modern day parameters, and correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Cam, if there is a crash in a qualifying session, they will just go straight to red most of the time now to preserve the clock at this point. Keep as much time on the clock as possible. There's no time pressure then to remove a car or remove an obstacle, or maybe there's wall damage. There's every possibility of that. Typically speaking, now Formula One goes straight to a red flag if there's any kind of qualifying crash now.
But ruling on outcome is our favorite topic on this show, as Knock Wappy rules the realm. Because if they went to red, it would have ended qualifying.
Yeah, because there was, like, I think less than 30 seconds left. A red flag would have just ended the session right there. And then, yeah, you know, which apparently, like, the mantra of race control is if it's the end of a session, they don't even bother throwing the red because it's redundant. Because a double yellow will effectively do the same thing. So the problem was they were too late in putting out the double yellow because Zone Russell's able to go through half of turn 9 and turn 10 at full racing speed with another car in the wall, which should not be happening. That's dangerous. My logic has always been, if one car can crash on a part of a racetrack, there's no reason why another car can't do it.
Yep.
So you stop the session and you make sure Max and his car is okay, and then you can re... If it ends the session, so fucking what? Doesn't matter. Safety should come first, not...
But entertainment, Dre. We're in the entertainment business. Did IMSA teach you nothing?
This is the problem, because the entertainment business is exactly why the race control department oomed and ahed about whether this was a single or a double yellow flag. Because they thought there was an outside chance they could get laps done under a single yellow because they wanted to gamble because Max was so far off the road. We shouldn't be doing things like that. That should not be a consideration. In the same way that IndyCar shouldn't be considering where the leaders are on track when a car dies on its front straight, like we saw at Indianapolis and at Road America a couple of weeks ago. No, like, we shouldn't... Like, these are things that are not fair considerations when safety should be taken first. That's how I look at it. So, look, fair play to George Russell for, you know, playing by the rules. I mean, as we say in other sports, you play to the whistle. And Russell played to the whistle perfectly. It was a very intelligent, very clever bit of driving, and he earned that pole fair and square by the rule book. I just think race control was sloppy as shit, and I'm saddened that Rui Marquez, the current race director, didn't come out publicly and say, well, why? I'd like to know more as to why this decision was taken. Like, or the indecision in this instance, more likely. But yeah, I just don't think that makes much sense to me, quite frankly. But what do I know? The race itself, Cam, I mean, at the face of it, it's quite a dull affair in the actually, because George Russell pretty much leads this race from start to finish. A few laps of overcutting from people like Kimi and Lewis to an extent when they were free-stopping. But on paper, George Russell wins this race reasonably comfortably, but actually watching it in real time, it was anything but.
Yeah. If you just see like one of those lap charts that shows him in the lead, well, he pretty much spent the whole race in the lead bar the pit stops. Everything behind him was up for grabs pretty much until the last sector of the race. And weirdly, for the first time this year, really, Stepan up won Mr. Max Verstappen, who pretty much got a brand new car behind the front wing. What did Red Bull change? Everything. Everything? Everything. And at least on the one race sample, did pretty well. Tire degradation, I think the biggest telltale here, to go bar for bar with Russell, and just slowly whittled that gap down pretty much once he cleared Hamilton and forward. Any pit stop lands a lap or two one direction or the other, and we're looking at another non-Mercedes win.
Yeah, I mean, we saw to a degree what happened in Catalonia, right? And there was mitigating circumstances there because George had an extra turn in the front wing he wasn't supposed to have. If anything, this has doubled down the fact that Mercedes does have a small vulnerability in its tire wear, because if this sample size holds up, Red Bull were better on its tires and Max could push, and Max was consistently 2 to 3 tenths a lap quicker than George in similar scenarios here on the hard and medium tires. And that's what made this race interesting. And as Cam says, it wouldn't have taken much, maybe a minor pit stop mistake or something like that, that to flip that 1.6 over. I actually think the key moment of the race was that second and final round of pit stops for the leading cars, because I don't know if it was on purpose, but Mercedes basically trapped Max in a really weird pincer that kind of butchered him to a degree, because Max was within a second of George by the end of that second stint. And I think if Red Bull goes for the undercut right there and then, because they had a set of new hards and they had a set of new mediums, I think the plan ultimately was try to get him on the mediums for that final stint. So maybe go to lap 53, 54, something like that. Try and do a 16, 17 lap stint on mediums to get to the flag. But Merckx comes in first. Mercedes comes in first with George. And then that kind of puts Max in no man's land, because he has to still extend for another really 5 or 6 more laps to get to that medium threshold. While at the same time, Antonelli's the fastest man on track and he's butchering Max's lead. And you don't want to give up track position to Kimi either, otherwise you're still boned because you ain't got the pace to beat him on track. So Red Bull was kind of boned in that sense.
I think the biggest thing there is that, like, the hard was the only viable race tire. The mediums would just die the second you pushed on them. We'll get to Ferrari in a few minutes, but they thought softs were a good idea for some reason. I haven't figured out why. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Jeez Louise.
I actually think the opposite, that I think maybe Red Bull left this one a little more on the table than they could have by pitting Max as late as they did. If they bring him in a lap or two earlier, that gap doesn't balloon out to Russell, because Russell pulled 10 seconds on him in the undercut. The tire wear was so strong for everyone. Like, Mercedes did not have bad tire wear. It's that Red Bull had particularly good tire wear. Everyone else still had god-awful tire wear compared to those two teams.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing was that Russell was able to turn that 1.6 into about 11 seconds overall by the time Max comes out of the box. And then Russell's tires are dying. Max's tires are dying a little bit less. And then Kimi's tires are dying a lot less, because he extends even further and has even more tire offset. And all three of them bunched together right at the end. There is a reasonable argument, maybe not a winning one, that Red Bull pits a lap earlier or a lap or two earlier. Maybe he gets to Russell and can do something about him. Maybe. That's the first time where I would say no asterisk, no BS, no bad starts. Mercedes were actually just outgunned in race trim. So far this year, because again, in Spain, Lewis had the better strategy overall in being on the three stop when three stop is viable at Spain, and Russell had a front wing issue and the VSC helped him, even though he probably wins that race without the VSC with margin. With this, it was just a straight fight.
Yeah. Two guys, same, essentially very similar strategies, only Max was going to have a nice little tire delta at the end. He had a 5-lap delta on George during the final stint. That did come into play, especially late on, like the last 4 or 5 laps was really like when Max
ripping time out of Russell, big time.
Yeah, like he was taking more like 0.7, 0.8 a lap out of George, but George had just enough in hand to hold on. Enough where a minor mistake or a pit error or something like that flips that result around. Maybe, because like I said, and again, yeah, I think Red Bull probably should have come in a lap or two earlier when they were extending that second stint, because like Verstappen said himself, the tires were dead by the time he came in on lap 49. I would have given a lap of delta back if it meant not losing 2 seconds to George on that in lap. That was
the thing. Russell's pace on, like, he clearly was pushing on that undercut run, and he was better part of 2 seconds a lap quicker, just lap after lap, and that becomes sort of an unbridgeable time delta. At the same time, Kimi Antonelli goes even further on the tire offset. He was so fast all day.
Greased Lightning.
But, and this is the bit about Kimi where you're like talking about Aprilia and MotoGP. We need to see him continue to tick boxes. Kimi is a little erratic and a little unsure of himself when someone punches him in the nose.
Yes.
And you'd kind of expect that out of a year or two, not much further than a rookie at this stage of his career. But he had a lot of issues on the brakes early on, actually had a temperature delta between his two front discs, which, ask Nico Rosberg from Monaco in 2016, not a fun time.
Carlos Sainz as well, Bahrain a couple of years ago, upset. Not fun.
And he had a few instances of going off the track and being barged off the track and making it worse for himself. The speed is still there. He was probably the fastest driver right with maybe a tiny touch behind Max in race trim. But if he doesn't have as disastrous a first stint as he had,
he wins this race.
Very good chance he wins this race because he's so fast in the second half.
It goes to show you that once again, and so, I mean, look, Toto Wolff summed it up quite well after the race. Like, I believe the quote was something along the lines of, you can control a racehorse, you can't try to speed up a donkey. Because that's exactly what this is. Like, again, what have we always said about Kimi Antonelli more than anything else? He has incredible outright speed. The pace is more than there.
That's the same thing that Toto basically said when he put him in the car in Monza 2 years ago and he crashed it after three quarters of a lap.
Where he was going like 10 kilometers an hour through a couple of corners quicker than everybody else because, like, it was such an astonishing first free practice session that, like, I was working for Autosport at the time, and their journalist, John Noble, who used to be there with them, he's now at the race, and that's Cameron Orcus now at The Athletic, where they were like, I was editing the video of them talking about it. They were in awe of what they were watching. They were like, what the fuck is this kid doing?
As it turns out, overloading the rear tires because the rear tires are basically off the rims by the end. By the time he got to Parabolica,
yeah, just ripping the shit out of it. And that's Kimi to a T. It reminds me a lot of the old story of Casey Stoner, where sometimes his fastest sector times would be on his warm up laps because he would just rip the thing as soon as he got out of the pits to try to get the tires up.
Just all out from the second that he got out on track. But the thing is, Kimi's actual in-race tire wear, again, is terrific.
Yeah.
His actual race pace, his ability to manage the car and his resources across a stint is fantastic. But he's gotta shore up that lack of composure when someone thumps him in the nose, because his first six laps of this race looked like something out of a public lobby. Everything but the crashing.
Yeah, like that's his biggest weakness at this point. Like it's lack of composure. That's what it is. It's, and I think that will just naturally come in time because he's not been used to battles at the front of F1 fields very much. I mean, he did it a couple of times in last season, but really this year is the first time we're looking at Antonelli, the challenger for race wins. He's had five of those already this year.
As Kimi Antonelli, the championship contender.
Yeah.
It was a solid enough recovery drive. The problem then becomes, and this is very much assumptive given the nature of the Red Bull ring, given that Max Verstappen just is a fucking animal at this track, more so than most. I do not want to see what ends up happening when you throw him in the mix and then one or both of the Ferraris in the mix, because then that composure becomes a big gap in the armor much more quickly.
We've seen it before, like in China, for example, when Ferrari was at least briefly able to stay with Mercedes early on in stints, it fucked up George Russell's race in the sense that Russell lost bucket loads of time because he couldn't clear the Ferraris until later in the stint when their tire wear picked up. And we all saw what happened in that race. Antonelli's 8 seconds down the road by the time Russell's finally cleared of them. And that's just derailed George. Yeah, it's just completely derailed George's race at that point, because he's not going to beat Antonelli in a straight pace battle right now. Right now, Kimi is the faster man in race trim. That's more than evident by the last few races. But if George can be clever and lead these races from the front and keep his nose dry, he'll win some by doing just this. Like, that ultimately, if you're at the front, you dictate the terms of engagement. And that's what George did so well last year, is that the two chances he had to win races last season, he took a two times Merckx were in that performance window, George won both those races easily. Like, and that's what he's really great at. He's a fantastic front runner.
He's very good at playing the field to his advantage. That's the big, when he's put in a position to do so. Beyond that, Ferrari.
This was a concerning race.
Start?
Like,
Ferrari one race removed from, frankly, a dominant win for Lewis Hamilton in Spain. And yeah. Spain historically, but not all the times, being a very good barometer of what your total package is. Ferrari were fourth best here. They got smoked by McLaren in race trim.
They were the only big hitter that had to go to a three-stop strategy just to get to the flag, because Lewis...
A necessity.
Lewis didn't have the tires to make a two-stopper work, and Charles Leclerc, by the time he got to the end of the race, it was pointless keeping him on a two-stopper because he was at the back of the leading queue and he had a 35-second lead on Liam Lawson anyway. So it was effectively a free pit stop.
Charles out-qualifies Lewis... And then just was horrible in race trim. Like, Lewis drove around him and took off, and Leclerc was acting more as a roadblock for drivers in the top of the midfield.
Hadjar, Norris, etc.
Dude, Kimi Antonelli catches him after that disastrous couple of opening laps. Leclerc empties the battery to try and keep him behind, and then is out of electrical charge going into the third sector. Kimi drove by him like he was in an LMP1.
Yeah, just that raw electric. It
looked like 500 horsepower.
It was like he was in a different class of motor vehicle. I feel bad for Charles. I mean, this is now 5 Grand Prix in a row that Hamilton's outperformed Charles. And again, we've said it before on this show, this is not all on Charles Leclerc. It's only fair we give Charles the same benefit of the doubt that so many gave Lewis last year when he was struggling in this team. And I think Charles is getting used to being on carbide brakes for the first time in his career, because he's had Brembo's his entire career until halfway through this season. And that deserves a period of grace, I think. That's exactly what we did for Lewis last year. But Ferrari still seemed like a disjointed team, and you could tell they were despondent, because Lewis after the race openly said that, look, it's going to be a long time before we can get the engine upgrades needed to give Mercedes a fight. And I'm like, you weren't saying this after Catalunya when you said you were in the title picture. Like, I mean,
no, a lot of people with rose colored glasses were talking a lot of shit. Scarlet. Talking a lot of shit, and that immediately was met with a soul-crushing comeuppance like one round later. Because, like, it's the same reason why I'm pumping the brakes on, well, what is Max in this fight, is that it's a one-race sample. Mm-hmm. We got a one-race sample of Ferrari actually being good enough to go beat Mercedes, and it was not a completely straight-up fight. We go one round later, Mercedes blows their doors off in qualifying and blew them away even harder in the race. Like, the Ferrari is genuinely pretty solid over a lap, but their tire wear is not good.
No.
Their tire wear was openly so bad. Like, Lewis stayed with George for like three laps. Three laps after that, he was 2 seconds off.
Yeah, like Lewis said after the race, every time he tried to push on a set of tires, the rears would go within three laps. Like, yep. And he was
and never it was worse for Charles.
Yeah, and Charles was in no man's land in that race. Hamilton was able to salvage, I think it was P5 on that free stopper, and including a soft stint, which I don't know whose bright idea that was.
Fucking what doofus in that team plugged that strategy into fucking who plugged that shit into an AI machine and went, yeah, that's the move. Soft tires on a day that hot at a rear limited circuit.
Fred Vasser openly said they were caught in the trap of trying to chase Mercedes and they forgot about everybody else, and it showed.
Yeah, they were fourth fastest, and I mean, the only team that they could have conceivably beat here, straight up, McLaren, because McLaren were kind of just in no man's land. Sneaky great race for Oscar Piastri, I have to say.
Very good sneaky race for Oscar.
Excellent race for Oscar. He needs that because he's been kind of all over the place this year.
Yeah,
kind of a nastier version of what we saw out of him at times last year. He was fan fucking tastic in race trim.
Yeah, really, really great performance from I praised Lando in Catalunya for a sneakily very good drive there. It's only fair I do the same this week with Piastri. That was his best race so far this season, in my opinion. That was a race that he needed because Piastri's looked a little bit second rate compared to Lando for most of this championship so far. Again, I've said it before, those two are very evenly matched at their best. Very, very close. Hard to separate the pair of them. And yeah, that's why
they're very good at different things. And yes, that makes them complement each other quite well when they're not fighting for a championship.
Indeed. And I mean, it's funny you mentioned that, Cam, because it turns out Thomas Vermeulen, who is Max Verstappen's manager and the Verstappen camp in general, sat down for preliminary talks with McLaren over the course of the Austrian Grand Prix weekend, which has, of course, now got the rumour mill turning. Now, I think Zach probably regrets that now because he's had to furiously deny ever since that there's any chance that he's going to blow up his team because, I mean, look at the Raw's contract details. Lando and Oscar are both tied down to 27 and 28, respectively. I think Lando's on the slightly longer deal right now.
It's not like McLaren haven't bought any big-name signings out of their contracts in the last 5 years. Wait, they did exactly that. With Daniel Ricciardo, I don't think there's a particularly large amount of fire to this. If anything, I think this is more Max's camp trying to put the fire to Red Bull's feet to get their shit together, which in the short term, at least, it looks like they are starting to do.
Yes. I mean, I think if you're Max, it doesn't hurt. Is what I'll say. If there's anything that happens with Max, I don't think it will be this season. I think it'll be next season. I think
it doesn't hurt to window shop.
Exactly. And I think you survey the landscape. Because Toto Wolff confirmed that Mercedes will not be making any driver changes for next year. They essentially confirmed that George is on a multi-year agreement at Mercedes now. Antonelli's not going anywhere for obvious reasons. So Mercedes are locked in, at least in the short term. Ferrari are now probably locked in for quite a while. Apparently, according to the race, Lewis Hamilton has a driver option, not only for 27, but apparently also for 28 as well. So if Hamilton wants to stick around, he can for another 2.5 seasons. And now, with Hamilton in good form at the moment, why would he go anywhere else right now? He clearly loves Ferrari. He wants to drive for them. He's now the spiritual leader of this team, and he's now got 2.5 more years confirmed. Red Bull, Hadger's not going anywhere, obviously. And McLaren
solid, had a very, very good race on Sunday. If that's all he can do in the second Red Bull, that is all he needs to do.
That's all he needs to be. If he's hovering around the top five and he's within 3/10 of Max, that's good enough, quite frankly. No one's expecting Max to get beaten in that Red Bull camp. Just run him close. If you can run him reasonably close, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm getting at here is those are the only seats that Max would want, potentially. And there's no vacancies at the inn right now. And I don't think anyone's going to move heaven and earth for Max. It looks like Toto has finally given up that golden goose of gunning all out for Max. That looks like that's gone.
Yeah, you know why? Because the second time that he was put in that position, he put pen to paper, got that driver in his car. That driver's leading the world championship right now. Like,
he's got his max equivalent.
Yeah, like, if he wants to build around Kimi, like, worst case scenario, if those two fall out and George leaves, look, Kimi's showing right now he's good enough to lead Mercedes however long he wants.
Exactly. McLaren, I would say, is the most potentially open door out of those big three teams. As I mentioned, Charles Leclerc is apparently tied down to 2031. So
I like the pain.
If he likes the pain. McLaren, Oscar's a free agent apparently at the end of next year. I think Zach would be foolish to move on from either of his dudes. He's got a very good, very well-balanced team, and he's got dudes that are prepared to buy into what McLaren's vision is. Why would you want to move on from that?
Because you can get Max Verstappen, who can just drive the nuts off a car.
Is Max that much better than either of those McLarens?
Yes. Abso-fucking-lutely. Yes. If you can deal with them, keep in mind, who is McLaren signing probably as their next team principal?
GP.
Exactly.
I mean, Red Bull is adamant that McLaren are making Giampiero Lambiassi, Max Verstappen's current, soon-to-be former race engineer, to be team principal. There's murmurs that Stella's going to Ferrari at some point. Going back
to Ferrari. He also likes the pain.
Yeah, like, and I've said before, McLaren needs a pit wall guy badly.
And you're not going to get much better than GP.
GP's like, the best GP's in the biz.
Fantastic race manager. And the biggest thing, like, that is the person who you can get on the radio and manage Max, because Max absolutely gets in his own head when he's pissed off.
Absolutely. You've seen the red mist. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we've seen the red mist. So could it happen? Maybe. Mm-hmm. If Max Verstappen becomes a free agent, he instantly becomes the person you need to try and get signed, unless you are locked down long term. Mercedes are locked down long term. Ferrari will be. That only really leaves McLaren. At the same time, Max basically has it all his own way over at Red Bull and has for quite a while. Would he want to give that up?
I don't think so. Know. And I think, to be fair, even Thomas Vermeulen, his manager, openly said Max would like to spend the rest of his career with Red Bull, but he's got to have a viable car. So which says, if he's being sincere, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be in this. He's basically saying Max is prepared to be a Red Bull lifer if the car's good enough. That's a huge commitment, potentially.
Yeah, which we'll see if this B-Spec RB22 can be that across various tracks. And if it isn't, well, this year's probably a wash anyway in terms of the championship. I really don't think we're heading towards anything but a Mercedes 1-2 in the championship.
Yeah, and that's what's got people talking, because Verstappen does have a release clause in his deal that he can activate in August if he's not top two in the championship, which he almost certainly won't be.
Not with that. And but the biggest thing with Red Bull as well, if you can get the car there on speed, it looks like they're chipping away at it. They got to fix the reliability is the single biggest thing, because they have burned a pile of gearboxes, a pile of power units, a pile of failed aero components now. And
Red Bull's not the occasional, power, but not the reliability.
The occasional piston through side of block.
Not great. No. It's not great. You want to avoid that in the circumstances. That's the state of play. Again, I think ultimately Max will stay. I just don't think there's a viable alternative for him right now. And as much as Zach knows how good Max is, I also think that Red Bull have got a strong enough technical department where they can put a package together that can give Max enough where he can bridge a gap to another car. We saw it last year. We saw it during this race in Austria.
Thank goodness they got rid of that bum, Adrian Newey. See what he produced over at Aston? I say in jest.
They weren't even the worst car this weekend, because both Cadillacs were dead by lap six.
I disagree. I heavily disagree, because Alonso was subject to a full race distance in that hunk of garbage.
They're like, they're 3 seconds a lap slower on a 67 lap track.
It's not great, is it? Like, you're wrong. Both Cadillacs had their brakes explode in the space of about 4 laps in the Grand Prix. They were still faster across the weekend at pretty much all stages than Aston Martin. Like, every component on that green sled.
The good news is that Adrian Newey came out today on social media. He wrote a lengthy statement, which you can find on their socials. It looks like there is an upgrade package coming for Hungary later this month. I hope it gives them something, because I don't want to see Aston suck, but at the same time, this has been humiliating this season watching Aston Martin. Like, that is not how you run a race team right now. And we've talked about this before. Operational excellence is a very real thing. And as much as Aston Martin and the Silverstone base, they've spent a lot of money and resources trying to turn that place over. Adrian Newey is not the dude who should be running the entire team. That's not his strength.
He's not the oversight guy beyond the actual technical details of the car, which is what he was at Red Bull, because last couple of years he was not really in the trenches. He was overseeing their technical department. And pretty much everything that we thought had happened with this partnership has come to light. Of the car really didn't see a chassis dyno until after we saw it on track in Barcelona.
They didn't touch it until Newey rolled up late from his gardening leave at Red Bull, and that was a catastrophic mistake.
Yeah, because they went with an extremely aggressive aerodynamic concept, and that's visible in the car. But it's not fleshed out. It's very much embryonic. Is it any good? We don't know, because it's nowhere near started, let alone finished. And they're designing their own gearbox for the first time since the Jordan days.
I was going to say, like, mid-2000s, isn't it? Like...
Yeah. Well, and I'm pretty sure they had Toyota gearboxes when they were buying from Toyota as well, so even further than that. And the power unit is terrible. They also didn't know how terrible it was, because on the dyno, thing runs, I mean, not great, but generally it works. You bolt it in the car and the thing shakes itself to bits. Every operational component about how they've approached these 2026 regulations is exactly how you don't want to approach them, especially as a factory team. Mercedes taught us that in 2014. Audi taught us that when they went to a V6 in the R18 in Le Mans prototypes in 2011. And they realized, oh, we need a better chassis dyno. This thing's shaking itself to bits. These things matter.
It's just general incompetence. This is why I said they should never have demoted Mike Crack or Andy Cowell. These guys who know how to oversee shit. They've got the names where they could have had someone oversee an operation. Mike Crack's a great technical guy. Have you read the tea leaves, Cam, that most of the teams in F1 now are now being led by engineers, because it's a complicated formula and it's a complicated set of rules? It's no coincidence, in my opinion, that you're seeing Andrea Stella, Io Komatsu, Lauren Mekies, engineer dudes are now overseeing these things, because they have the right approach to handle the most complicated F1 cars we've ever had.
And the thing is, you would think that Adrian would have a handle on that, but he's never done this before. This specifically. And
he's an aero guy, not an overall car guy.
Well, and that's another thing, is that he's been with an all-star team at Red Bull for the better part of 17 years.
Peter Pedrosa, Dan Fallows, Pierre Wache,
Rob Marshall.
Rob Marshall, the king of the flexi wings, they nicknamed him when he was at Red Bull.
Well, look at how those teams are doing and developing out of the funk they started the year in. Adrian was not the only cook in that kitchen producing magic.
Yeah.
And arguably, Adrian's best work has always come when there has been a system of checks and balances around him to temper his worst impulses. See the MP418 for more. I mean, unless that Hungary upgrade package better work, because right now we're probably looking at the worst F1 car of the decade.
Pound for level of resources and names behind it. 100%.
By far the worst.
100%. Not even close.
We all know what the 2021 Haas was. Cut the floor, throw the Russian flag on it, get it out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, like, it's pound for pound, it's horrible. And yeah, the worst F1 car since we went to turbo hybrids in 2014. Easily.
The last green shit box at the back of the field was better than this.
Yeah. Like, even the dying entrails of Manham / Mauritius, at least you could say, well, the budget was basically 40 pence in a can of Mountain Dew. So you can understand why they were so shit. Like, this is a team that has poured hundreds of millions of pounds into its own base and throwing money at getting the best technical staff that money can buy. And they've produced this. They're almost if this upgrade package doesn't work, they're probably going to be locked into 10th at best in the constructors and hoping that Cadillac doesn't get a freak point somewhere.
Yeah, that's the thing. Cadillac had a very bad weekend. Their upgrade package worked, at least on the stopwatch. Big step forward towards the midfield.
Yeah, that's a big step. You
need to make the car stop exploding, though.
That would help, certainly.
It usually does.
Also, before we get out of here as well, Liberty Media, a quick message. You can move on from Bernie Eccleston.
We have, as a society, long since progressed beyond the need for that vicious little troll of a man. He literally showed up, was racist, and then left. It's all he had to offer the weekend.
Man came up, did this bizarre media deal when I was still with Crash, like where it just comes out where he says, you know what the problem with Ferrari is? They've got too many Italians in that team. And I'm just like, what the fuck does that mean?
I think we all know what it means.
In the sarcastic, like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about, Bernie? Jesus Christ. Just drop some casual xenophobia, hand out the trophies at the end.
Casual, that's professional, my man.
I was like, yeah, I know a lot of people love to say casual, like it weighs things down. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, sure. And then hands out the trophies and then leaves. And I'm like, Bernie Eccleston is 95. I'm literally waiting for that man to die at this point. You don't need to invite his moldy ass to any Grand Prix paddock anymore. Fuck off. Like, we don't need his ass in an F1 paddock anymore. We have all moved on from Bernie Eccleston, and the sport needs to as well, quite frankly. It's a fucking disgrace that he's invited to F1 races, because the man's a racist piece of shit. We have all the evidence that we need on this. Like, him jabbing at Ferrari's Italians isn't even in the top five of most putrid shit he said in a media debrief. The guy's not well. He needs to be left alone. He has antiquated views from the 1960s that need to just fuck off and go away. Let the man live out the rest of his very rich life, or I don't have to fucking hear him, quite frankly. End of discussion. Formula One is back this weekend. It's a part of a back-to-back. We're in the real thick, heavy European part of the calendar now. Just some small occasion called the British Grand Prix. That's going to be interesting, especially with these batteries. Good luck harvesting enough to make that work around there. And it's a sprint weekend too, because everybody loves them. We're going back to where it all began. The very first sprint race in F1 history was at Silverstone, and we're coming back for the fifth sprint round of the year already.
I'm sure if we get a repeat of the events of that weekend that everyone will take it in stride with absolutely no controversial takes.
None whatsoever. Ferrari's going to get arse blasted with their lack of deployment. Good God. At Silverstone? Fuck no. Good luck.
McLaren could be pretty good here.
Who?
McLaren. Could be very good here.
They've typically gone well at Silverstone in the last few years. So, yeah, why not? If nothing else.
Max doesn't have the option to just remove the rear wing like he did last year and qualify.
If nothing else, McLaren are the best in-season development team in Formula One. If they can figure it out, it's them. And they will. They've got a very good technical department over there. Give us because half it's Red Bull. Anyway, that will be next week on Motorsport 101. Next episode will be the Aston TT in MotoGP. Why not Bez? Well, Ram should.
This is why.
That's why. More on that very soon. Till then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley. And we'll catch you guys again soon. Sayonara.
Come on, preseason pick. Come on. Let's go. Please.
Well, someone's going to get a prediction right this season.